Hey, you, people, it's us, the Bitter End Podcast. We're back, kinda sorta. This isn't season five, it's a bonus episode. That's the sound that bonus episodes make. My name's Tom Denny.
And my name is Toddly T, your pal on the microphone, Todd Jordan. I had it changed by Depot.
Oh, finally, good stuff. Yeah, so it's not season five just yet. Special bonus episode going out here. Todd, why are we here?
Well, we are here because for the first time, we got to go and barge our stupid faces into someone else's podcast.
And we fucking barged it good.
It was a delight. Our friends Kobe and Helen from the Flicks Watcher podcast, they've launched a brand new show which is all about all of the shit that you can watch on Netflix.
You ever have that thing where you're like, you spend about half an hour scanning through Netflix because you don't know what to watch? Hopefully this podcast will help you with that.
At the very least, it will help you definitely know what you're not absolutely going to watch.
I mean, every little helps.
So what they did was they asked me and Tom to come in, each pick a film, and visit them at Flicks Watcher Studios to talk about our picks and try and convince them why we thought they were excellent, excellent choices. So what you are about to hear is not an episode of The Bitter End. It is an episode of the Flicks Watcher podcast. During this episode, we're going to be talking about the film that I got to pick. Me, Toddly T, your buddy, your pal. I picked a stupid, goofy, latex-drenched horror movie called From Beyond.
Damn right you did.
Tom did also get to pick a film that is coming in a later episode.
Yeah, you'll just have to wait and see what kind of nonsense I like to pick.
So, sorry that we don't have any new Bitter End for you. You are about to listen to this episode of Flicks Watcher featuring Todd and Tom. If you do like what you hear, definitely make sure that you go and subscribe to the Flicks Watcher podcast, available wherever you get your podcasts. Go back, listen to the archive of all their other shows, and keep an eye out for upcoming ones.
I guess without further ado, we'll hand it over to ourselves on Flicks Watcher.
Welcome to episode 5 of Flicks Watcher. I'm Helen.
And I'm Kobe. Welcome to this episode of the Flicks Watcher podcast, where we introduce From Beyond alongside Tom and Todd from The Bitter End, and really recommend you go and check out their show. It's all about following the franchise films to the very end. If you know how many sequels there were to Universal Soldier, then the podcast is for you, basically.
Like what you hear? Don't forget to subscribe to us on iTunes. You can find us on Twitter at FlixWatcherPod, and visit the website flixwatcher.tv for full listings about this particular show. As always, films reviewed in this podcast were available to stream on Netflix UK at the time of recording. There may be bad language and there may be spoilers. You have been warned. Hi, and welcome to this edition of Flicks Watcher, and today we are joined by Todd and Tom. If you want to say hello, guys, and tell us where we can find you online.
Hello there. This is Todd Jordan from The Bitter End Podcast.
And this is Tom Denny from The Bitter End Podcast as well. Where are we, Todd?
We are on Twitter at Bitter End Pod, and we are at Facebook at Bitter End Pod. And more importantly, we are here today with Kobe and Helen from Flicks Watcher.
Hey, thank you very much. But tell us what your podcast is about briefly.
Oh, hey, that's an excellent idea, Tom.
Oh, yeah, good stuff.
Do you want to give it a go?
So, like, we are franchise detectives that we pick a film franchise and we decide that we're going to watch it from the very beginning to the very end, no matter how bad and or stupid that may be.
We take a good idea and we run it into the ground, essentially.
Like the people who make these franchises.
Like the filmmakers themselves.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. So we've been going for about a year. We've done Friday the 13th.
There's 12 of them.
Highlander.
There's 8 of them. If you count the second one that they made twice.
Yeah, doesn't make any sense. We've done The Howling.
There's 8 of them.
Wow, that's surprising.
Ooh, there's some dodgy werewolf films in there.
There's some not so good ones in the middle there.
And we've just finished doing Universal Soldier, which there are 6 of, and absolutely no one knows that there's any past one, I think. Oh, there's some thrills, there's some spills and chills, and the occasional psychotic break.
Sounds awesome.
It's a mixed bag.
But today we are here to discuss
From Beyond.
Which was chosen by you.
Can you tell that I am excited to talk about From Beyond? I cannot even begin to think about saying the name of it any other way than with that much gravitas.
With that emphasis. Why did you pick it? And can you give us a lowdown of what happens?
Well, man, this film is... it's just bizarre. The day that I saw that this was on Netflix, I think I called in sick. I'm a really big horror movie fan. It's one of the reasons that me and Tom started doing The Bitter End together is because I really love horror films. Tom really loves films. Not horror films, not so much. Like,
more action films, and that's not so much your bag.
And so we wanted to do like a cultural exchange, and I was like, let's dive into Friday the 13th together. That was the start of our sort of podcast friendship. And the thing about From Beyond is it's one of the very first horror films I ever watched. I think I was probably 12 or 13. I was around a mate's house, get it on the VHS, pop it in. And nothing in the world could have prepared me for what is in this film, because everything is in this film. It's very unique, I think.
It's based on a Lovecraft story, isn't it?
Yeah, it is a 90-minute movie based off a 4-page H.P. Lovecraft short story.
I don't know what that is. Tell us what it is for the listeners.
My goodness. H.P. Lovecraft.
Oh, is that a guy?
He's a dude. He was a dude. He was a slightly problematic, very troubled writer who created a bunch of like weird-ass apocalyptic American short stories, like the Cthulhu mythos and a bunch of other things. This is not his most well-known work. So what better place to begin a cinematic journey into the works of H.P. Lovecraft?
Right, so let us know what actually happens in From Beyond. Give us a...
let's see if you can
what
sum
kind
this
of
one
synopsis.
Up.
Yeah.
Okay, all right, I'm going to level with you. It's pretty difficult to put into words the unexplainable. So... There's an actor called Jeffrey Combs. He's in a big spooky house, which is 666 Benevolent Street. I'm sure everything will be fine there.
I did not pick up on that. That's amazing.
I was just going to say, how many times have you watched this film to pick up on that?
4 or 5. But you guys are watching horror films wrong if you're not having the number 666 leap out at you. So Jeffrey Combs is like some sort of scientist. And there's like a cold open in the film. There's no music. He's just beavering away in his house. He's working on this machine called the Resonator. It's got these 4 big tuning forks. Can't get it to work. He fixes something, changes something, does a little tweak here. Suddenly... boom! The machine springs into life. It makes a big noise, which you might recognize from the Beastie Boys hit Intergalactic, because they sampled the noise of the Resonator machine. It's that bwing noise.
Man, you were picking up all sorts of deep cuts in this.
Yeah, no.
Honestly, this.
And I really, you know, like.
You like the Beastie Boys more than me.
I love Intergalactic.
I should have picked up on that.
Honestly, man, the screenplay for this movie is carved onto my heart. So it turns out, oh dear, the Resonator, what it does is there's parallel universes that are sitting atop our own. It's there, but you can't see it. The Resonator blurs the line between our universe and theirs. So when the Resonator is on, it like emits this vibration-y field that makes everything purple, and it makes the monsters that are normally invisible, visible. But they can also see you, and they are mean.
There's a lot of big floaty fish in
Floaty eel things. I wasn't scared by them.
Yeah, so you say, buddy.
But then, I mean...
you look like a haunted man to me.
The floaty fish are a little bit kind of like, okay, floaty fish galaxy. I think I can deal with that. But then it gets a little bit dark.
Well, because there's another... besides everything going really purple when you turn the Resonator on, the other weird thing it does is it makes everybody really horny.
Oh, yeah, it
does. We'll get to the horny bit in a bit.
That's a very key point, Cody.
It is a very significant horny bit.
Why else did you think I liked this film so much when I was 12?
I was thinking when you set it up as like you're a 12-year-old with a VHS tape, I was just thinking how much has that been worn down in specific sections. But then you talked about the cold open whereby... what was the name of the first scientist guy?
I can't remember his character's name, but the actor is a guy called Jeffrey Combs.
So Jeffrey Combs is there... playing away, gets it working, and he calls his matey boy in.
Oh my, Edward Pretorius.
Yes,
he sounds like a nice guy.
So he gets killed in the cold open.
Pretorius is like Pretorius is our hero's boss, and he's like a weird kind of slightly spooky old man guy, and he's like, yes, Jeffrey Combs, yes, this is everything we've worked for. The Resonator, don't you see the big spooky eel monsters? And then one of the monsters bites Jeffrey Combs on the cheek, and an old lady from next door comes running into the house to like shout at them for all the crazy lights and the noise in the middle of the night. She's like, "You boys, stop it in there." And then she goes into the room and Pretorius, the old man, is dead on the floor with no head. Jeffrey Combs is horrified, pale as a sheet. Doctors come and take him away. And he goes, "My God." And then big words jump on the screen. H.P. Lovecraft's From Beyond.
So I should have taken note of the Lovecraft in there, at least from that, from the title.
It's a big deal. He's a, well, especially because the director, Stuart Gordon, their previous film with a lot of the same actors was H.P. Lovecraft's Reanimator.
Which Helen's a big fan of Reanimator.
I haven't. I think I must have seen it, but a very long time ago. Okay. But I have seen Society, which was obviously directed by Brian
Yuzna. I met Brian Yuzna last year, and I got to have
I'm envisioning now the
conversation
moments.
With him. Yeah, and I only talked to him about From Beyond, which he produced, and what's it called? Honey, I Shrunk the Kids,
oh,
which he worked
shit.
On the screenplay yeah. for.
Oh, seriously?
Yeah, and I got him to sign my copy of Honey, I Shrunk the Kids.
What?
Yeah.
Why
nice
did you have
guy.
A copy of Honey, I Shrunk? I mean, I loved that when I was a kid, but...
It's a great film.
Yeah.
That's why I've got it. It's a great film.
Yeah, Rick Moranis.
Rick Moranis, right?
Much missed from Hollywood.
Yeah, because he didn't turn up in the... He was the notable absence from the latest Ghostbusters film.
Well, yeah, he retired.
Yeah.
That won't do that. I mean, fair play to him for not showing up in the... Like, because the Bill Murray cameo in that Ghostbusters is a not so good.
There's a not so good Bill Murray, but the others I'm cool with.
The others were cool. Bill Murray was wasted. But we're getting off track.
Yeah, so...
So,
Tom, as a non-horror fan like myself, I think actually this table's kind of divided by people who are non-horror fans. Tom and Kobe, myself on this side, and on that side we have Helen and Todd.
We will fight you. We know where all the weak spots are. We've seen it in the films.
Yeah.
And this is, I'm assuming this is the first time you've seen this film
this
as
is
well.
The first time I've seen it. I've got to say, actually, I really enjoyed it. I mean, I was just kind of like, whoa, okay, this is crazy. I was trying to think of... I had some sort of like thing. It's like... It's very much kind of a bit like Hellraiser. Like, there's a lot of that kind of...
It's body horror. You know, it was peak body, made at the time.
It's like even more body horror than maybe Hellraiser. Oh, it's like body Hellraiser meets The Thing. That is kind of how I would describe
it's
like... All
kind of the supernatural meets the body horror, which is...
So like
sort
yeah
of
like
practical
there.
Body effects and,
yeah which
and
are
so much latex
which are like the guy who's playing Dr. Pretorius must have been so sweaty making film because he is absolutely caked in it. But I mean it's brutal. It's not for the faint of, you know, if you were like someone who's like, oh, I like horror, like I like Scream, you might not like this because this is a very different bag. But like basically like don't they go into this parallel dimension and everything goes a bit wrong. The goody scientist gets splitting headaches, which manifests itself in a very unusual way a little bit later on. We'll get to that. And then there's... Who's the female lead? Is she Dr. Pretorius's girlfriend?
No, so I feel like I must interject here, Tom.
Please.
She's a professional.
She is a... psychiatric professional.
Oh, yes.
Because the police, I don't know why the police are making this decision. They want to lock away our hero, Jeffrey Combs' character, forever because he won't make any sense. He keeps talking about parallel universes and monsters and resonators. He's a crazy man. And so she has a real chip on her shoulder about schizophrenics because her dad was locked away for her entire childhood as a schizophrenic, and she's like, no, I can save him, he's got a second chance. I know if we go back to the scene of his trauma and relive it, everything will be a-okay, everything's gonna be all right. And then the police are like, well, all right, but what we'll do is we'll send Ken Foree, this big badass police officer, with you.
Oh, yeah, he's
who's
great.
Like more batshit insane than literally anybody else in the film. And so they all go along to spend the night in this terrifying house.
Yeah.
They turn the switch on.
Yeah, and they turn the resonator back on.
Yeah, they're kind of like, well, the last time this was turned on, a guy turned up with no head. So let's see what happens. And it all goes seven shades of wrong. She gets infected with kind of mad lust
is...
Or, like, lust for the dimension. She's, like, when she's in the dimension, she's like, I love this.
It's horny insanity.
And addictive as well, because it keeps on switching off. And she goes and switches it back on again.
Yeah.
She gets addicted, yeah.
Yeah. Even though bad shit happens every time it's switched on, and they switch it off.
And every time she goes in there, there's, like, the monstrous form of Dr. Pretorius.
Yes.
Who lives on in the beyond. And... He does not look.
All over
he does not look the same as he did in the normal dimension.
Yeah.
He turns into like a big mass of slime and tentacles and it's not a good look.
Helen,
what?
I can kind of see why you love this film so much. I mean, it's basically from the same team as Reanimator and. For its time, it's kind of playing around with special effects and what can be achieved. And at no point is it presenting itself as anything serious or groundbreaking. It is just basically, we had so much fun doing Reanimator. Let's come back and, you know, let's have a crack at this and kind of have a go. We quiz together and I mentioned to one of their other quiz members that we were doing this. And they said, I love that film. So I can see exactly why and who this appeals to.
But?
Yeah, there's a big but coming in.
I mean, I enjoyed it for the most part, and then I think it got a little bit repetitive in the effects, and I kind of lost a little bit of interest towards the end, but I do enjoy horror, and I find this quite ridiculous, and I do... enjoy like the levels of how far you can kind of take it in its repulsiveness and in the body horrors, you know, what can you do with it? And it's kind of fun. It has elements that I like, but yeah, it's not up there. It was interesting.
I don't think it's like a classic, but it's a lot of fun if you're into like that kind of area of horror, that kind of like really dark, gruesome body horror stuff. I think there's a lot of...
I mean, did you actually think it was gruesome though? Because that's one of my kind of things. I just thought it was odd.
It is odd, but aren't odd things more interesting?
I mean, when everyone starts getting the tentacles coming out of their foreheads...
Yeah.
That's pretty odd.
The snake penis type thing.
Yeah, and then they go down to the basement and there's like a giant worm that eats the... doctor, and then they turn off the machine, and then he comes out and he's completely bald. And he's like, by that point, he's
the
like,
the worm ate his hair off.
Yeah, he's just like, yeah, whatever, okay, yeah, carry on. What else have you got? And
just bring it.
Yeah.
So the worm ate his hair off and then implanted the penis.
No. It's the effects of the resonator stimulates the pineal gland in your brain, which is the part of your brain responsible
for. Third eye.
And so it's growing the more time you spend in the field of the resonator. You get this third eye, and it eventually goes through your brain and out your forehead, and it into the form of a big, crazy snake penis.
Okay. And you can only see like through grainy VHS quality, even though it's the third eye.
You can only see through.
It's not as helpful as
through predator vision, basically.
Yeah, and it inexplicably makes you suck people's brains out of their eye socket.
Yeah, that's. I mean, the first time I saw that, I kind of laughed my head off.
It's so good, right?
It is kind of like the perfect teenage boy film, in a way. It's got mild eroticism, plenty of gore, penises.
The mild eroticism
in
comes
the wrong
out
place.
Of nowhere as well. Like it's very. It feels very tacked on. Where you're just kind of like, oh. Oh, okay. So I felt bad for the actress having to sort of like put on this like ridiculous bondage outfit and kind of grind. And it was extra creepy because the doctor by that point
was bald and had his pineal gland.
Looks like he's at death's door. And it's just kind of like, what is going on here?
This is the kind of, that's the kind of scene that in-betweeners would love to bits. That's the kind of thing they'd be talking about. And just a girl in leather lingerie grinding on top of...
A semi-dead man
with
a tentacle growing out of his forehead.
It's because she spent too much time in the field of the resonator and it's given her horny craziness, guys, and she is addicted to it.
It's just science. It's just, you know, like that's just science, isn't it?
I spoke to her on email.
Did you?
What's her name?
Barbara Crampton. She's a bit of a legend. And I... I only had a couple of questions with her, like it was part of a Q&A thing, and there was a rumor that she got to keep the crazy bondage outfit, and so I was just asking if that was true, because it sounded like rubbish, and she kept it and she sold it in her neighborhood garage sale.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So there is some fan bigger than you who is now the proud owner of this, probably.
Yeah, I mean, that is beyond memorabilia for me. I'll be happy with the Blu-ray. Thank you very much.
Yeah, and unless it wasn't even like someone who's kind of like, they just came along and just like kind of like, oh, they were like, I'll take that. It's like, yeah, I wore that on From Beyond. It's like, you what?
Shut up and take my money.
You're an actress. I don't care. I just think this is going to fit. Yeah. How did you feel about it?
Yeah. As a total non-horror fan, I want to know your...
What my thoughts were. I guess I don't know. Sorry?
Were you bored is what I'd like to know.
I don't think bored. No, I wasn't bored. I was just always thinking, what the actual fuck is going on here? And it didn't really interest. I just kept repeating, yeah, what the fuck's going on? Why is this? Why am I watching this? And I didn't hate it. I just thought it was weird. And it didn't really entice me into thinking that I wanted to watch again. I didn't find it particularly gory, but I don't know if it's a... I was quite interested in yourself, Tom, in terms of you watching it for the first time this time, if you thought this was very, very much of its time in terms of the effects and the amount of latex and the amount of slime to just slather over things. Because nowadays that would be done with eons and eons of CGI and stuff, and it would have had a completely different feeling effect. So I think it's kind of benefited from this.
Yeah, I think this is way better than if they made this now and did it with CGI. I don't think it has the impact, because like, no matter how good you make something look, you know it's not there. And there is something about watching something like this with like some people, some team of weird guys with like their little joysticks and animatronics and latex have made this like crazy deformed demon mutant man with a tentacle in his face. And I appreciate that. And it's... Yeah, I don't know. It's more...
It would not have worked at all in CGI completely.
I think you'd just be like, cool, okay, whatever. I've seen... Go and see weird CGI unimaginable things all the time. That's what cinema is now. So, like, to see someone actually, like, hand render this vision from beyond, I appreciated it. I was just like, cool, where are they going to go with this next? Like, it didn't make any sense. It's kind of like, okay, cool. Yeah, you've got me for another, you know, you got me here for 80 minutes. I'm happy to go where you want to go.
So, I mean, the effects were very, when did this come out?
86. So, I mean, it basically comes from a period where anyone in horror was just trying to create the maddest shit that they could. Yeah. So, you know, you've got American Werewolf and you've got The Thing, and then you've kind of got a little bit later Total Recall, or just trying to do like completely mad stuff. And, you know, watching it for its time, when you kind of watch these films then, you're like, oh, this is really weird. How does it happen? And watching it now, I mean, it is obviously dated, but I still kind of enjoy seeing what they were thinking, what they were doing. And they were just kind of trying to push the technology they had and just kind of push the bizarreness and just really, really go for it in insane ways that no one really does anything like that anymore. Like,
no, it's true.
Just, it doesn't, horror films these days don't really have that kind of bizarre, like, unrealness, but it's still kind of real because it's that guy's face, but it's kind of been twisted and weird and they've exploded him, but like his eyes are still looking at you. It has that kind of weirdness, whereas science fiction horror hasn't really moved. It doesn't really do that anymore. It doesn't kind of push it. It's just like, oh, here's some CGI or some blood or something.
I mean, the difference between this one and the films that you mentioned there, like American Werewolf in Paris, in London, that transformation scene was brilliant.
Yeah.
And I think there's more going on in From Beyond than there is. There's a lot more goo and there's a lot more kind of latex and stuff. So they're probably trying to take it to the nth degree. They're trying to turn it to 11 in this one. But I think how they did it in Werewolf was the exact right amount of like, let's turn this shit up. And I thought, I watch that now. I don't know. Maybe I'm selling myself short when I said I don't like horror. If someone says to me, let's watch a horror film, I'll probably say, nah, I can't be asked. But if someone said, let's watch American Werewolf in London, I'd be like, yeah. Even though that is a horror film, like, through and through, really, isn't it? Horror comedy, maybe.
I think you need to reinvent your I don't like horror saying.
Genres. I don't like bad films. Yeah, sorry, Todd.
Tom started suddenly looking very...
I am less of a horror fan than you, but I do like watching, you know, I really enjoyed this. Like, I've enjoyed some of, the Hellraisers and, The Thing. And, I do really like the stuff that has this very, the practical effects stuff. Because it's like you were saying that, people don't do this anymore. Mm. So it's kind of dated. But also, at the same time, it's not so dated that, you can't watch it and you really... It's not like watching Logan's Run. That looks dated.
That's hard to watch, I think.
Yeah, that is... Whoa, okay, that's kind of ridiculous.
There is that thing with the practical effects. They date a lot better than the CGI ones. If you look at Tron, the first Tron, for example,
yeah,
that's a painful watch.
But, I mean, even watching, the first Harry Potter films and stuff like that, when they're on a broomstick, it's like, fucking hell, here we go. Yes, it's video game cutscene.
Jumanji's one that sticks out to me when you see the monkeys dancing in the kitchen. You just think... Well, I mean, they're not there, are they?
Just hire a monkey.
The worst, CGI to practical thing I've ever seen was, the really high-res version of one of the Hobbit films.
Really?
You know, when...
The barrel riding scene, by any chance?
No, not where they went, on a GoPro, white water rafting thing. I think it was it's the one with the bear in it? Which one's got the bear in it?
I think that's the same one as the barrel riding scene, but the second Hobbit film.
It's so long, it could easily be at least six films.
That whole thing that where Peter Jackson was kind of like, I'm going to film it in a super high frame rate. It's going to be awesome. And then it was kind of like, actually, it looks like television.
But yeah, that's the first one came out.
Everything looked like either the bits with real life actors looked like the BBC's Chronicles of Narnia from the 80s, where you're kind of like, I can see the guy from the Yellow Pages advert with his prosthetic nose and his stick on beard. And then suddenly it went into like a cutscene from World of Warcraft. And then it went back to kind of like, oh, I can see Ian McKellen's fake nose. It was really so, and in 3D. So every now and then a bee would fly at the camera and be like, whoa, I'm a bee. And it's kind of like, oh, we didn't need to do this, did we? Sorry, Todd, I know you like those films.
But it's interesting you to say Peter Jackson, because obviously he made his mark with Bad Taste and Brain Dead, which I imagine he got some inspiration from watching films like this, because, you know, they are kind of brilliant and gross. And, you know, he was always kind of pushing what he could do as well. And eventually he obviously moved over to CGI, but he started off very much... messing around with latex and gore.
I think for me, one of the key things is, as you mentioned there, that it's a little bit gross, it's a little bit extreme, it's a little bit all kinds of things. And that for me, for better or worse, I think it's, you're going to watch it and you're going to think something. You know, I find it very hard to believe that anyone could sit through the 90 minutes of this film and just go, meh. Oh, I didn't like it. I didn't hate it. It's just, you know, it was nothing. It's not a digestive biscuit of a film. You know, it's like a licorice all sort. You know what I mean?
It's not a passive film, is it?
It's
not at all.
And it is only 90 minutes, so credit to that.
You do get the, because you said that the story was 4 pages long. There's a lot of kind of should we bulk out the showreel, lads? between the guys and the special effects, it's what have we got the rights to? 4 pages of Lovecraft? Yeah, we can stretch that out to 90 minutes. I've got all kinds of stuff I want to try out.
And honestly, you can just really... The fun that they were all having, I think, is
you can tell they're having fun there.
The screen. Mm. The cast is small, but everyone plays it with so much enthusiasm. Ken Foree, who plays the cop, who's completely mad and supposed to be the muscle, he never, ever stops, just killing it.
He's hilarious.
Barbara Crampton in the female lead, she's this complicated, she's meant to be a studious scientist, but then she gets addicted to the sex force field. It's not the best role that's ever been written, but my God, she really throws her back into it. You know, everyone is just amazing. And, you know, the music and the sets, everything's really lush and done on a budget. And It just looks like the most fun place to hang out. Like, if I could live backstage on a film shoot,
it'd be this one.
You could do a lot worse.
You could have, I mean, you can have some fun playing with the latex. Make some globules.
Oh, the rat party must have been amazing.
Guys, we got all this slime left over.
Yeah. I like the Kemper, what's his name?
Kemperee.
When he died, I thought that was quite... I quite like that. Not the fact he died, but the way he died, and his kind of melting into the floor with his American football shirt still kind of clinging to him, and his ribs exposed, and his face. You could tell like how they filmed it. His head was like sticking through the floorboards.
Yeah.
And all the kind of animatronics were kind of squealing and squelching around him.
It's a very unfortunate end. He gets eaten by a bunch of evil bees.
Yes. Yeah, hold on. This is one thing I didn't understand. Because the bees are attacking the two other guys.
Yeah.
And then they go onto him and he gets
it's because he drops his desiccated torch, Kobe. He's got this torch that he's flashing around because there's all this purple light coming from the resonator. He wants to see it more clearly. So he's like trying to help them. He's like, let me just put my torch down. He drops his torch. It shines in his face. And then all of the bees are apparently attracted to the light. And they like swamp him. And he tries to bat them away. At no point does he think, if I take like a step to the left or right, I will be out of the beam of this tiny handheld torch. He's like, no, I'm standing my ground. But then he gets eaten by the evil bees.
Yeah. He's like, no bees are tougher than me. Oh, they are. Oh, no. I not forgot my, they not were my bees. American football jersey. No.
They're bees from beyond.
Oh.
Yeah, that was a real tearjerker when Ken goes.
Oh, I'm sorry. I feel sorry for you. Every single time you've seen it, it's a little bead.
Yeah,
forms in the corner of your
pour,
eye.
Pull one out.
Pull one out for a brother.
That's kind of querying. Do you ever find out what does happen to the head? It's never really resolved, is it?
I think it's just where he's going. He doesn't need a head anymore.
Okay.
Or is his head like the seed for the rest of his body on the other side?
It might
does it
be
kind
that.
Of stem? Does it grow from the neck down? Then
there's a few lines about how once evil Dr. Pretorius moves from our world into the beyond world, thanks to the resonator opening the gateway. When he comes back, he makes a few lines about how bodies change. You know, they'll grow old, they'll die, but his mind will live forever. And so every scene we see him, his body has become a little bit more
disfigured,
for want of a better word, messed up, just because you don't know what he's doing all the time that we can't see him in the From Beyond world.
You don't know what he's doing there.
We don't know what's going on. And there's a classic line from it, which was on the poster for this. When he comes back, he says, humans are such easy prey, which makes me think that when he's on the other side, you know, maybe he's kind of dominant there. He's like hunting all of these other monsters. He's building an army, but maybe there's even bigger, crazier, more monstrous things that are hunting him and, you know, messing his face up. I don't know.
I think you thought about, I don't know. Have you read into that a lot of that's what you've taken from
nah,
it?
Nah, man.
That's it.
Just going wild.
Do you reckon this inspired have you guys seen Stranger Things?
I have.
Do you reckon that might have inspired a bit of the Upside Down?
I certainly do. I think if you remove the bits of Stranger Things that were inspired by
all 80s
incredibly
Spielberg.
Prominent 80s horror works, then the entire series would have been about 30 seconds long.
Which is not a bad thing, because I thought it was a cool series.
Yeah, I think I do like the parallel dimensions vibe going on here, and I like that it doesn't answer all the questions. You know, like, you've just been able to kind of like freewheeling kind of like, oh, so maybe there's this thing, and there's like, you know, like, I like, it's good, like, when you get films that can strike that balance of like answering enough questions and leaving enough things open-ended for like the audience. You know, not like open-ended as like wink to the camera, there's going to be a sequel, but in like kind of like, well, what the fuck was that? That was cool. Oh, they don't explain that, and then you can kind of draw your own conclusions. Like, a lot of stuff in there was so much stuff in the last Mad Max film, you know, like imagery where you're just kind of like, what was that? No idea, no explanation, but cool. I appreciate that. Like,
I mean, as in what was that character? What was that person? What was that?
Yeah, like this. Like in that the last Mad Max, where they go through like this kind of like black swampland, and there's all these people walking around on stilts,
yeah.
And then it's gone, and that's like less than a second, a few seconds in the film, and then it's gone. And like, it's like with this that they kind of find this other dimension, but they still don't know. They don't know why it makes everybody really sexy and get like, you know,
get
like,
the freak on.
Yeah, and like get like the little.
Doesn't feel the need to explain everything or go into great detail to make sure you've understood it. And this is why this is happening. And
yeah,
this is happening because of this.
And like some films, you need like some films is kind of like, yeah, but could you just let me know why? But with this, you just kind of like.
Just gonna let them have their fun.
Over me, yeah. Like so much pink goo.
Because I had no idea that was when you get the synopsis at the top end. I had no idea that there was that's how it works with the two dimensions melded together and only visible via the resonance. I didn't realize that was what was going on. I don't know where I thought the eagles came from, and I didn't know where he went. Dr. Pretorius went when it wasn't on.
Well, it's a bit of an allegory. Like, I'm gonna lay some heavy shit on you.
Okay.
I think it's genuinely a bit of an allegory for the early stages of medicine and those doctors who worked out about bacteria and germs and trying to convince their colleagues to wash their hands, basically, because there's these invisible monsters that will kill you if you don't do this thing, and you can't see them because we don't really have microscopes yet. But I know that they're there, and you just have to do this thing. And there's this guy, I forget the guy's name, sorry, someone's going to know the name and be like, I can't believe you don't know it. But, you know, he knew it and it was killing people and no one would listen to him.
And was that the guy specifically with the pregnant ladies?
Yes.
Yeah, so I did GCSE history, history of medicine. So I really loved that kind of story. And I loved, because it is a crazy thing. If you think nowadays, nowadays you just think, yeah, there's germs. Mm. Like, wash your hands, man.
And it's nice in this it's very self-contained, because obviously they don't have the budget to like shoot many days outside of the house they're in, and they don't have that much cast. So there isn't like all this going to, no, but you've got to listen to me, scientific community. Like, it's just,
well, they had two sets basically, didn't they?
Yeah, they got,
and the captain flipping flopping between them both.
I think that's
one thing that irritates me a bit. It's like, why are you going back there again? Are you going to the other place again? Yeah. Oh, yeah, in that place again.
We've got booked for another day. We'll just shoot some stuff around it and it'll be fine.
Yeah, so I like the idea of that there's these monsters all around us, but we just can't see them.
I like the way you're thinking about this. I like the way you're thinking around it.
I should watch it again.
I'm not going to watch it again. But I do like the way you're thinking about it and alluding to how germs were discovered. I like it. So I'm going to give it maybe one more point in the category.
Yes!
For that one reason.
Talking it up, dude. Good stuff.
This is what I'm here for.
I think it's time to give some scoring.
Cool.
So you guys are going to have to talk us through the categories again.
So first up, we have the recommendability score. Yep. So this is kind of, I always think this is the score. So, you know, it's rolled to the end on Netflix and your star rating comes up and you're given it your stars, and it's like how likely you are to recommend this to a friend. And we do allow points if you can't decide on a.
This is an Excel spreadsheet, so it works to however many decimal places you want.
Okay, can I go first? Should I go first?
Yes, please.
I'm gonna have to give it a 4.5. There's very, very few people that I think should not watch this film.
If you'd have known me before we did this podcast, would you have recommended this to me?
I would absolutely recommend it to you, because, dude, you made it out the viewing. You're alive. Didn't kill you.
Hold on, what kind of films kill you, though? That's not
a couple of people that are super duper squeamish. And it would have traumatized them. They're the 0.5 that I've reserved it for.
Okay.
Everybody else, it's only 90 minutes, right? And you'll come out of it a richer person. Or if not, it was only 90 minutes. Doesn't matter. Give it a punt. That's my take.
Similar, I've got a similar outlook to you, but I'd probably go for a 4, because I think that like the window of people who don't want to watch this film is probably slightly bigger than you might think.
Traitor.
I sat and watched this on my own because my wife was out. If she had seen this film, fuck me, no, she would not like this at all. But I was well into it, so I'd be like, you know, like if you can hack something scary or gory. I mean, it's not even
that gory.
It's not scary. It's just
that's why it's just kind of
gross. It's just a bit grim, you know. I don't know. This is a bit of a lie. It's a romp, isn't it? It's just a 90-minute romp to the end. 5.
You're making it sound like a Carry On film.
Yes, yeah.
There are moments that would not be out of place in a Carry On film.
Well, yeah. That's true, actually.
Yeah, like the whole kind of like the sex dungeon bit. You know, you could just imagine Sid James just barging in. Just be
like, I think that's
with
one.
A big tentacle coming out of his forehead.
Go on, Helen.
I think initially I was kind of a little bit harsh when I first watched it, and now we've sort of talked about it and kind of gone back over it. I don't know who I would recommend it to, seen as the only person who I would has already seen it. I can't imagine any of my friends would find anything to enjoy in this, but I'm going to give it a 2.5.
So what were you going to give it?
Well, I was going to kind of give it a 2.
All right, okay.
I kind of upped it a little bit, but I can't...
The face Todd is pulling.
Yeah, I mean, I honestly don't know anyone who would...
Enjoy it.
Yeah, I mean...
It's me! You know me!
I know, but you've already seen it 5 times, so you don't need telling. I don't know, it's slightly obscure in the sort of horror art from that era that, you know, it's not particularly well known as some of the other ones, and it's just that a little bit too obscure, I think, to kind of get that I think there are a lot more sort of coherent films from that time kind of achieve a little bit better. Yeah, I feel it's just a little bit incoherent to recommend as a 3. I'm really sorry. 2.5.
It's all right.
I've been dealing with this for a long time. Nobody understands me.
But yeah, you keep enforcing on them.
I didn't force it. You asked me for a film. I didn't force it on anyone.
I came in here and it was going to be a stone cold 2, and you have convinced me a bit to raise up to a 2.5.
Yes. Go team from beyond.
I can't think of anyone who I would recommend it to. And like you're saying, Tom,
the man on the street.
If I watched this by myself, and there's some films in the series when we've been watching this for Flix Watcher, and I just look down the list and think, yeah, I have to watch it by myself. Yeah. No, there's no way.
I've got to find an hour and a half to myself.
No way. Sarah's going to be even slightly into this. So, 2.5. Let's go into the next one. Repeat viewing score. Todd, I think I know whereabouts in the spectrum this is going
to
fall.
Well, to be fair, I watched it first time when I was about 12. I'm 33 now, and I've watched it maybe 5 times. So I don't think I can watch it again and again and again and again, but maybe once every couple of years, right? What does once every couple of years equate to in the 5-point scale?
Whatever your heart feels.
3.5, is that fair? I would say a 5 is like once every year. Mm. 3.5. I'm giving it a 3.5. I'm standing by that.
Tom?
I'm going to give it a 3. I don't think necessarily that I would watch it again on my own, but if it was a case of like having a few beers and watching it with some friends, I would have no qualms popping it on, because it is just a bit daft and silly. Like, you know, I think if you've seen it once, you know, not like it's a casual thing to pop on in the background, but I'd give it another. I'd have another once round with some other people, maybe with some people who hadn't seen it, just so I could watch and see what they did. I like that in a film, just being kind of like, how are you? Oh, something's good coming up in a minute.
I did that with my wife and Game of Thrones. We did the whole season of Game of Thrones, and when it comes to Red Wedding, I took a step back so I could see the TV and the reaction at the same kind of time. I was just like, yes, that's what I wanted. Helen?
I'm really sorry. I'm going to have to give it a 1.
A 1?
I know. I mean, I'm not going to watch it again. It's what I am going to watch is Reanimator, though. So it...
Strong.
It's kind of made me go, I kind of want to see what they got up to in
Have you seen Reanimator 2 or 3?
I haven't, no.
Ooh, they're a doozy. Yeah, you should do.
So, I mean, it's kind of... What it has done, although I don't want to see this again, it has kind of gone, yeah, I kind of want to watch some of those body horror films that I watched when I was younger and some of them that I missed out on. So if it hasn't made me want to watch it again, it has kind of reinvigorated my interest in that era. So
one.
Still a 1, sorry.
I can live with that.
I'm going to give it a 1.25.
Thanks, buddy. I need everything I can get.
It's the, I think the 2.5, I think Tom convinced, if it was at a party or the guys were on together and there's one other person that's seen it and decided to put it on there, I would watch it to see what other people thought. And that's where the 0.25 comes from. Outside of that scenario, I don't think I'll watch it again.
Fair enough.
Noted.
Small screen score. So this is, how well does it work on a small screen? Do you feel the need to have watched it in the cinema?
Well, I never got to see it in the cinema. When you say small screen, do you mean TV or do you mean smartphone?
Well, TV.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. We're talking like, so, you know, does it work in the arena of being on Netflix?
On Netflix. Yeah. I got it. Okay, well, I think it does. It's the only way I've ever seen this film, and I would pay upwards of £135 for a ticket to see this in a cinema.
So you do want to see it in a cinema?
I would like to, but I never have, and I still love it. So I think that the damage is done off of purely, you know, tiny little square TVs from the 90s and,
that's true, actually,
and beyond. It? And beyond. So I'm going to have to go for a 4.
Okay. I can see this being, if this was at Prince Charles, there would be a gang of people loving it.
Yeah, and they would all, see that. We would have a lot in common with those people.
Yeah, if like this, if there was a cinema screening of this tomorrow, I would 100% go, because I think it would be awesome to see on a big screen. I watch it on a regular telly, and that was absolutely fine. I'd imagine watching it on a phone would be a waste of time. Like, just, I think that you'd lose all the impact of like all the practical effects, and then you'd find the things that didn't have crazy effects a bit boring. So I'd give it a 3.
Helen?
I'm going to give it a 4 in this category, mainly because I think seeing it on the big screen would kind of point out the sort of datedness of the effects and be a bit of a shame. But also mainly because one of the things about Netflix is every now and again, something will pop up and it'll be, oh my God, I had that on VHS, or I remember seeing that round someone's house on VHS when I was 12, and now I get to watch it again. And I think that's kind of the area that it is kind of really interesting. You can go back in and see these films that either you watch when you were young or you kind of missed out on. And I think it's going to be a discovery for quite a lot of people who were fans of that era and maybe missed it or have kind of heard about it and have never seen it. So investigate. On the small screen.
Don't pay any more than the Netflix subscription for it, basically.
Or £135, if you wish to.
That's just me.
Honestly, yeah, it's a bit steep. Yeah, I think it looks good on the small screen. Don't want to watch it in the cinema. 4. And the engagement score, how engaged were you whilst watching it? Were you playing on your phone? Were you checking Wikipedia?
When I first watched it, I was absolutely riveted.
Right.
Could not tear my eyes off. When I watched it just recently, but in the run-up to this podcast, I was on my phone, but I was looking up trivia.
Which you brought to us, which is very much appreciated.
Yeah.
So give us like an amalgamation score of the times you've watched it then.
Well, man, I mean, all I can do is talk for myself, right? And I get that my view on these kinds of films is not going to be everybody's, but I can only speak for myself. I'm going to give it a 4.75. And I mean it.
Why is it not 5?
It's not a 5 because I think there's just something about this film that makes me excited to be alive. And when it's on, I kind of want to like text all my friends and look out the window and just run and tell everybody. Like, it's almost before the film is over, even, I want to tell everybody about the film.
So what you're describing there is what typically would be in a rom-com, about when a guy first meets a girl and they want to scream from the rooftops, and that's what you're in love with this film, basically.
I'm in love with this film.
Okay, yeah, okay.
How do you follow that?
Yeah, very difficult. I would say it's like a 4.5 for me. Like, I don't know if part of this was also just like influenced by me and Todd's friendship. I was watching this and being like, my God, this is just like my friend made film. So I was like texting you probably halfway through and being like, I was like, I'm watching it. And you were like, oh my God. It's like, oh my God, there's like Hellraiser. So the 0.5 taken off of that is probably your fault for making me text you.
That's on me, buddy.
But yeah, like, it's you don't know what's coming next. So I was kind of like, yeah, okay, cool. Take me on your ride.
I'm going to give it 3.5. Towards the end, I got a little bit distracted, and I did do a little bit of IMDb-ing and went, oh yeah, so it is the Reanimator crew. So that was there. But yeah, I mean, I kind of stuck with it, and, you know, I did find it entertaining throughout. And, you know, there's been a couple of films we've reviewed where towards the end, I've kind of given up a little bit, and, you know, checking the emails has kind of happened. Sorry, films. But yeah, no, I stuck with it. 3.5.
I'm going to give it a 3. Yeah, I don't actually remember what happened at the end. So that kind of seems to me, I don't know why I don't remember what happened at the end, but that kind of seems to me that...
Well, she ends up locked up.
Did the house explode?
The house explodes.
They jump out a window and all the neighbours have
Oh, that's right, yeah, the
and
neighbours
then she
come
laughs,
up.
And that's it.
No, but is she laughing or crying because her legs are...
A bit of both, exactly. I feel.
Yeah.
That's it. It's just the house explodes. She's crying. They go, we'll get you some help. Starts laughing. Starts crying. Laughing, crying, laughing, crying. Credits roll.
Booyah. So that gives us a total score of 3.3.
I think that's respectable.
Okay.
Yeah, that's a lot higher than I thought it was.
Yeah,
it
was, actually. I think you've sold us a bit. You
it's
should
like
be,
the
are you a
movie
lawyer?
That could.
Are you a lawyer?
I'm just one dedicated fan.
Convince people for a living.
Todd has stocks in the Blu-ray re-release of this film. He's just really trying to push it.
It is available now from all good retailers.
And also on Netflix.
Oh, yeah. Yes, watch on Netflix.
Yeah.
Don't pay the extra. Just watch on Netflix. And then just stop it. Cheers, guys. Just quickly remind us who you are, where you're from, and where we can find you.
I'm Tom from the Bitter End Podcast.
And I am Todd, also from the Bitter End Podcast.
And you can find us on iTunes. Just search for The Bitter End. We are there talking about silly films one after the other.
Yep, and you can tweet us at Bitter End Pod or find us on Facebook at Bitter End Pod.
That's brilliant. Thanks a lot. Cheers, guys.
Thanks.
Bye.
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 Well, I hope you enjoyed that show there with Tom and Todd from the Bitter End Podcast, where we're talking about and dissecting in quite a lot of detail From Beyond, the 80s body horror film. Thank you guys for being on there. Please go and check them out, and all the details to find them are in the show notes. Before we go, we have to say thank you, of course, and always with pleasure, to GL Productions. That's Tony, Greg and Jay for their sweet editing skills and advice on podcasting. And to the Mighty People, who you can find on SoundCloud, and they're providing all the tunes for this podcast, which is super kind of them. So go and listen to their tunes when you have a moment. When you have a moment more, come and see us on iTunes. Subscribe to us, review us, and share us with your friends. Come and join us on Twitter at FlixWatcherPod. And please visit our website for any other news and views and interactions with us. You can find us at www.flixwatcher.tv. That's simple. Bye.